Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Friday, March 29, 2019. The Japanese government donates $1.5 million to South Sudan for the removal of landmines.
There are more than a million people displaced from South Sudan. The majority of those will return down the Juba Nimule Road. There are hazards, explosive hazards, either side of it. And in order to clear the path for the return of the displaced, we need to get on and clear the minefields.
And businessmen and women meet in Juba to discuss investment opportunities in South Sudan.
There are a lot of things that we need to do, in particular in the banking sector, in the financial sector. We need to improve the capacity of our banks and their willingness and ability to issue affordable loans.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. News reports say anti-stall system was activated on the Ethiopian Airlines Boeing 737 MAX 8 jet before it crashed on March 10. The Wall Street Journal newspaper and the French news agency Today both quoted sources familiar with the preliminary findings of the investigation. The Ethiopian Airlines crash that killed 157 people was similar to the crash of a 737 MAX 8 jet in Indonesia in October. That crash killed all 189 people on board. Investigators in Indonesia have also targeted their probe on the plane's anti-stall system. Boeing is reportedly close to completing a software upgrade to the anti-stall system on the 737 MAX jets. In the meantime, a lawsuit has been filed against Boeing in U.S. federal courts in connection with the Ethiopian crash. The Japanese government has donated $1.5 million to the United Nations Mine Action Service, known as UNMAS. UN officials say the money will be used to survey and clear landmine-prone areas and to educate South Sudanese on the dangers of those explosive devices. Winnie Chirino has more for VOA from Juba.
Robert Balter, program manager of UNMAS, says his office will use the Japanese donation to empower the National Mine Action Authority to manage mine action activities across South Sudan. He says part of the money will be used for training national organizations helping the efforts keep South Sudan free of mines.
Japanese donation is going to fund two teams who will work clearing hazards in Pagere Payam, which, for those who don't know, is on the Juba Nimule Road. There are more than a million people displaced from South Sudan. The majority of those will return down the Juba Nimule Road. There are hazards, explosive hazards, either side of it. And in order to clear the path for the return of the displaced, we need to get on and clear the minefields.
Japanese ambassador in South Sudan, Seiji Okada, said on Friday that if implementation of the peace process succeeds, many refugees and IDPs will go back to their villages, and UNMAS will use the money to create a safe environment for returnees to grow their own food. Balta says the former Central Equatoria state remains the most mine-prone area because most of the fighting in South Sudan took place in the area. He says part of Barghazal has some explosive hazards. The UN estimates more than 360 sites have landmines, cluster munitions, and other explosive hazards threatening the safety and security of civilians, including 1.9 million internally displaced persons and returnees. Balta says 9% of rural parts of South Sudan have unexploded weapons, while 71% are free of hazards.
There's no evidence of new use of landmines, certainly no use of cluster munitions. Our database at the moment shows there are around just over 200 minefields remaining and about 121 cluster strikes. And we're getting on and clearing those now, so these numbers may even be smaller than I've just said. Our current estimate is that the total contamination is around 25 square kilometres of ground needs to be cleared.
The landmine expert says a young woman was involved in an accident 2 months ago around Lesotho Junction and is receiving treatment at the International Red Cross Center in Juba. He cautioned South Sudanese to be very careful with strange objects in the bushes. Japan has contributed more than $15 million since 2011 to mine action operations in South Sudan to help clear over 3.2 million square meters of land. For VOA News, I am Winnie Serino in Juba.
Financial challenges have forced the Dr. John Garang Memorial University of Science and Technology to close. Deng Ai Deng spoke with some students in Bor about how the closing will affect their studies and filed this report from Bor.
Acting Vice Chancellor Wani Lado says the university administration has been compelled to close the institution because there is no money to feed the students.
Although we sacrifice teaching them without meal, it will not come. It will fail most of them because they said the healthy mind is the healthy body. It's when your body is healthy, you will think very well. That is why we suspend classes. A suspension of the classes is the suspension of the academic year until further notice, until we get food.
Deng Mabur is a fourth-year student of education at Dr. John Garang Memorial University of Science and Technology. He says the closure of the university will delay his plans.
The issue of shutting down the school, suspension of classes, that has become an issue now. First of all, we were supposed to graduate this year approximately in June or July. But just because of suspension of lectures and ETC, that is now even extending us maybe approximately up to next year, of which in last year we were first suspended for one semester. We never come to school. And again, this year is being suspended until further notice. Till further notice may reach up to next year, of which we're not going to graduate.
Lado says he hopes the national government will find a quick solution to keep public universities operating during the school calendar.
The visits of the five universities are all in Juba. They are meeting concerning the tuition fee, and they are meeting concerning the feeding of the students, and they are meeting concerning the salary structure of the university. We hope them to reach a good success, to please the teachers, to please the students and everybody in the university. Education is the key to life. And I feel not happy when I see children playing on the street and people lingering in the market because of no schooling or because of the difficulties of the schools.
Another student, John Deng Madit, a third-year student studying human resource and management, says he worries that a student will spend years at the university before they graduate.
People come to school and they go out to do something. That's the one of the effect now. The student, they are wasting their money. The student are wasting the money now. You know, the cost of 24 these days, going back to the family, and we are wasting resources from the family without anything we are doing. We are going back now to the family, and then you are going to travel again, coming back. How many cows? Coming and going, and imagine from Barigidala, Will, and the other distance like Twitch, Gok, Rumbek, and Juba.
On Tuesday this week, vice chancellors of public universities said they have run out of money. Vice chancellors of the universities of Juba, Varel Ghazal, Upper Nile, Rumbek, and Dr. John Garang Memorial University of Science and Technology were summoned by the Parliamentary Committee for Education to discuss the planned dramatic increase of tuition fees. Some of the vice-chancellors say they would not reopen the universities until the government approves an increase in tuition fees. Last week, President Salva Kiir cancelled universities' tuition fee hikes. For VOA News, I am Deng Ai Deng, reporting from Bor.
Hundreds of businessmen and women are gathered in South Sudan to discuss opportunities and threats to investment in South Sudan. As Dimo Silva Aurelio reports from Juba, entrepreneurs attending the South Sudan Business Connect Investment Conference say the environment is suitable for local and international investors.
The investors meeting in Juba are evaluating South Sudan's investment opportunities, focusing on agriculture, finance, and telecommunications. Abraham Malet is a chairman of South Sudan's Investment Authority.
The rules of engagement in South Sudan investment regulations are so positive. I read them, I reviewed them, and I am ready to champion the show of these rules. Are very good. These rules tells the investor, you're welcome to come with the bag of your money. Next tomorrow, if you decided to go, you can carry the same bag full of cash. Nobody will stop you. Even the governor of Central Bank, he is the person who can actually help you to carry your money out. It's law, it's rule. In terms of regulations, rules, laws, South Sudan is endowed with very good rules. Now, enforcing those rules is the sticky point.
The governor of the Bank of South Sudan, Dier Tong Ngor, says the conflict has discouraged many potential investors. He urged South Sudanese to create a good environment for businesses.
As we now embrace the new era of peace, it is very, very important that we also prioritize issues that promote investment.
Ngor says South Sudan has many investment opportunities in the agricultural and mineral sectors. He says the government should invite more investors to initiate businesses and create employment for South Sudanese.
A lot of investors left our country. I would say even some of us who have money, their money left the country while they are even here. So capital is covered always, and whenever there is instability, there are crises, you will not expect investment to flow like in peacetime. But also, even if we we're getting peace, there are a lot of things that we need to do, in particular in the banking sector, in the financial sector. We need to improve the capacity of our banks and their willingness and ability to issue affordable loans.
He says a weak laws and high risk discourage banks from giving loans to local investors. Morgan Woodruff is the executive director of the Puerto Rico-based Fortress Global. He says the investment opportunities in South Sudan come with very high risk.
The infrastructure in South Sudan is not as developed as it should be yet. Roads are difficult. We can't make phone calls back to clients with any regularity. WhatsApp sometimes doesn't work. Making a regular landline phone call can also be difficult outside of the country. And finally, there's perception. I think some people in the audience have touched on perception in past presentations, and it's a significant challenge. Because even when we overcome risk in the infrastructure, there's still a negative perception that follows the country around. We can't sit down and have a conversation with an interested investor without them bringing up some news article here or there, some problem they've seen, something they've faced in the past on CNN or Al Jazeera. And it's difficult to overcome that as well.
First Vice President Taban Dengai says the government has contracted a Chinese company to build road across the country at a cost of more than $10 billion. He says good roads can improve transport and communication to attract investors.
We want to construct about 11,000 kilometers to connect the whole country. This is what we call National 1 and National 2. N1 is start from Nadipal, the border of Kenya, Kopoita, Torit, Gumba, Bor, Ayod, Canal Mouse, Balakal and Rang. This is N1. Then we have N2. N2 is from Juba, up Rumbek, Juba Ramshel, Yiron, Rumbek. And then there's a diversion that will go to Bantu, to the oil field. And then it continues to Awil.
Communication expert Jason Brockner says it is possible for entrepreneurs to invest here if the country's leaders work together to change South Sudan's image.
The main problem at the moment with attracting investment from overseas and also domestically is the perception of instability. I think the immediate task is to change that perception, to demonstrate in tangible ways that we are changing that for real, to give us some credibility to be able to attract people.
Traders from Kenya, Uganda have complained of multiple taxes levied on them by authorities in Juba and the border town of Nimule and Kaya. Local traders also complain about soldiers extorting money from them at checkpoints across the country. The South Sudan government plans to send a huge delegation to the United States to drum support for investment in the country. For VOA News, I am Dimo Silva Aurelio in Juba.
You You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, legal experts speak about loopholes in South Sudan's justice system. That story is coming up next.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
do you like newer music or older musical groups?
I like both, and I like good music. If it's good music and it's old, great. If it's new music and it's also good, great.
According to me, I just like newer music, yeah. Because the beat, I like dancing so much. Nowadays, beats are just sweet, you know.
The older ones, Kool and the Gang, the ABBA. Why? Because maybe I've heard them over and over again, and their message is, I think, weightier than what you hear nowadays.
It depends. Sometimes when I'm in my free time, I like to share old music, but I'm also a fan of new music because I've heard much people say old is gone, but old is gold.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus. This week, political activist Peter Bier and six other defendants were charged with insurgence and sabotage. A South Sudanese legal expert argues the reasons for Bier's arrest had nothing to do with the charge that was handed down and points to loopholes in South Sudan's laws. Meanwhile, the executive director for Human Rights Observatory says the revitalized peace deal will give South Sudanese a chance to review the country's legal system and ensure justice is served. Wake Simon Wudu has more for VOA from Juba.
Legal advocate Godfrey Victor Bola, who runs the Human Rights Observatory, says prosecutors likely realized that not having ever charged Peter Bier or the other six defendants linked to the Blue House uprising with a crime would make the prosecution's case look weak. Bola says that is probably why the prosecution finally charged the seven with the offenses related to the October uprising, in which the detained men broke into a weapon store inside the prison facility and held two prison guards hostage to demand the government give prisoners due process.
The prosecution might have realized that the charges that those people were under was a lighter charges, and there happens a new charges. So even if they move with those lighter charges or 100 charges, the court at the end of the day will dismiss.
Bola says detaining Bier and the six others for months without officially charging them with any sort of offense demonstrates the loopholes in South Sudan's laws that he says must be reviewed.
If the same law is saying that you cannot arrest somebody only within the parameters of the law, and the same law that tells you that, okay, you can arrest him, but you can renew his detention if you see that the investigation still has not finished. This is the law. There is need for South Sudanese to sit down and think twice.
Bola says the Criminal Procedures Act and other South Sudanese laws give prosecutors and investigators the power to renew detention of any accused person. National Security Service investigators testified in the case against Bier and the six others in Juba's High Court on Wednesday. During cross-examination, National Security Service investigators Colonel Alex Makelele and Yohane William were unable to present in court evidence such as bullet casings from gunshots fired during the incident at Blue House. Investigators also failed to explain the link between businessman Kerbino Wall's case and why the government decided to freeze his bank accounts. The government shut down Wall's businesses shortly after the October Blue House uprising, which the government accused Wall of spearheading. When Judge Sumaya Saleh Abdallah asked whether Wall's criminal case was linked to his property or investments, investigator Colonel Makelele said he had no idea. Advocate Monyuluak Alor Kwal is Bier's lead defense attorney.
We didn't find any new piece of evidence that we could say that would be used against us.
The defense said the investigator's testimony proves the accused were merely trying to stage a protest while in detention. Defense lawyer Ajak Mayol Bior said after cross-examining the investigators, he found no evidence linking his clients with the criminal activity.
Well, until now, there is no any shred of evidence that could show that there was a sabotage, there was insurgency, there was banditry, there was terrorism. The only thing that is showing itself is a normal protest that can be done everywhere.
Bior, Wall and five others were charged on Monday in what prosecutor Deng Achuel called a joint insurgency at the National Security premises last October. The seven accused were charged with the possession of firearms, sabotage, banditry, public disorder, and terrorism. Investigators in court failed to explain why the accused were ever arrested in the first place before the October Blue House uprising. For VOA News, I'm Waki Simon Wudu in Juba.
An American doctor has made it his life's work to serve the forgotten people of Sudan. The Sudanese government's escalating bombing campaign in the country's Nuba Mountains forced many doctors and medical staff to be airlifted out. Yet Dr. Tom Cantena refused to leave. Day-to-day fighting has since stopped in the region. However, Dr. Cantena recently told my colleague Carol Van Damme the struggle to provide adequate medical treatment for people living in crisis zones like the Nuba Mountain continues.
For the past 2 years, there's been no new fighting or aerial bombardment of the Nuba Mountains, something that had happened on a near daily basis for about 6 years. If civilians were not killed, they often suffered horrific injuries. But Dr. Tom Katina, who runs the only hospital in the entire Nuba Mountains area, says that doesn't mean the people are now safe.
So what happened was both sides issued unilateral ceasefires, and the Khartoum government has respected it. Now, having said that, I would still consider us as in a state of civil war because the battle lines are still drawn. There's not the Sudan People's SPLA North soldiers are still there. The Sudan Army government is still ringed around us.
In December, shortly after Katina left the Nuba Mountains, rumors were flying that Sudan government troops were moving into position to surround the area, getting ready to carry out another attack. Talks were supposed to take place in Addis Ababa, Ethiopia, recently between government and the Sudan People's Liberation Army North representatives. But similar peace talks that were held in the past had gone round and round, according to Katina, with no tangible results.
There was not really any common ground. They wanted one of two things. Their position was one, what they wanted first was a secular government with no Sharia law, where parties had equal representation, there were free and fair elections, that people were not marginalized, and these things had to be enshrined in the Constitution somehow.
Then came the Sudan protests over high prices that widened into a rallying cry for the overthrow of President Omar al-Bashir. Now, after months of large-scale protests, instead of trying to crush the SPLM North rebels, Bashir is doing all he can to hold on to power. Officials say 30 people have died in protest-related violence, but Human Rights Watch says more than 50 people have been killed. Katina says although the protests have distracted Bashir, the conflict in the Nuba Mountains continues, and the Mother of Mercy Hospital turns into a sort of MASH unit.
The other problems are still there. The cancers, the hernias, the people that need, women that need hysterectomy, bleeding problems, they tend to stay at home. They're afraid to even get on the road. There's no transport. They often stay at home. And I mean, quite frankly, they often die at home. Now, when the fighting slows down or stops, people feel a little more free to come out. And they come to the hospital.
They come to Mother of Mercy with the kinds of problems that are typical of the tropical world: malaria, TB, leprosies, pneumonias, and cancers. Katina now has two doctors, including a pediatrician and a nursing staff of about 110. In 2017, he received the prestigious Aurora Humanitarian Award for staying with the people of Nuba during the worst part of the fighting. Last year, Katina was asked to be the face of the Aurora Humanitarian Initiative, which was created to inspire those who have received aid in a time of crisis to express gratitude by offering the same kind of assistance to others. The prize money is $1 million. The Aurora Board is in the process of choosing its next award winner. Carol Van Damme for VOA News, Washington.
Abu Dhabi was host to the Special Olympics held last week, and the athletes from South Sudan brought a total of 5 medals home. As Ayen Dengbio reports, the athletes won those medals despite their health challenges.
Esther Wyatt Isaac, a runner with epilepsy, won a gold medal in the 200 meters. Sarah Tambuk, who also has epilepsy, won 2 bronze medals, one in the 200-meter run and the other in the 100-meter dash. And Alpaza Peke Ismail, who has Down syndrome, won a gold in the 200 meters and a bronze in the 100 meters. Tong Tor Malek is the Secretary General of South Sudan's National Olympic Committee and the National Director for the country's Special Olympics. He says the medals boost the morale of the athletes.
There is a change now. Since the time they went there and the time they came back, you can see them. They are very joyful.
The athletes had just 5 weeks to train for the Global Games held in the United Arab Emirates in mid-March. Chor says at least one athlete did not have regular treatment for epilepsy, and another had hearing issues that were not detected ahead of the competition.
Like Alfasa, when we are training him here in Juba, when we tell him to start running in the track, he would not listen to the starting point.
Chor says they were not sure why Alfaza Ismail had a hard time hearing, and the athlete had not mentioned health issues. He says they took him to the Special Olympics health clinic, and doctors there found the problem during a routine checkup.
They found out that Alfaza has some difficulties and some infection in the middle ear, which is now is going to have some treatment. So you see, he's living all these years, but he's not complaining. And he cannot hear the starting point when you say start or you say a whistle has been run or a whistle. He will not hear it quickly. But he will see people start running, then he will run with them, after them.
Ismail's hearing problems did not deter him from winning. And Chor says the families of the athletes are proud of their accomplishments.
The families now, they are so stressed that they didn't know that their children can be with the value to represent a country like South Sudan and to go and bring medals. Now in the family, they will now pay attention to those individuals.
Chor says South Sudan's Special Olympics Committee have partnered with Catholic Relief Services, the ICRC, and the Minister of Health to bring more awareness and resources for people with disorders like epilepsy and Down syndrome. Ayen Dengbior, VOA News, Washington.
That's our show for this Friday. We now take you to the Democratic Republic of Congo with the song Boulevard by Fer Gola.
Edith Edanga le Bruxellois, Patrick Kaozi, Bob Kuba double Rolex, Emi Makoso fair play. Igan se bora.
Mawe salamu.
Nanu Bungele, Veve Kiamongana,
Tedanga Oza Moke,
Victorio Mbaya,
Mawe Salamu, Nabolingo Yabomona, Edi,
Papa Nemalemba, Lanyao, Kin Makamu,
Tedanga Oza Moke.
Makamu la promesse.
Tala nende mote mesi kure
bia
bolingo.
Ukaze kongolo. Porta mote mano ferme. Edina sobeta tok tok. Eva ninga banda tongo. Chipo kozo fungo late. Qu'est-ce qui se passe mon amour? Makasa zoto nyo soye sili. Elanga babe ki. Tome
manga ina mo kongo. Toku mwa elongo. Nasala protege.
Jojo openda.
Porta motema no ferme, te dangana sobeta tok tok, te vaninga banda tongo, tipoko zo fumolate.
We've been listening to Fer Gola with the song Boulevard. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for inviting us into your homes and vehicles. You have a peaceful weekend. Remember to join us again next week for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
bokuta pongo bandale koya te
tala si metere simi mbelili kwangole katanga moto
Patricia Basangi
ko mela te payoti kingai na ebaleto na bangando sauvetage salité
Karim Diansaka
ça fait si longtemps lita mananga edi
nanu chenzeza
so kali susu beze note amu
wilingo
ikolo apotrina yo na so kavisa
Lola, le loin comme un bouteillage à Bamana et dit, t'es dans
Nora Pelinda.